Pit Guys.
This week's episode is brought to you by Colorado Land Tire and Service.
Well, hello.
Hey there.
Howdy.
Don't mind me. I'm just eating some dinner.
Not even dinner. You're eating sushi.
It's delicious. Got to pick out the freaking garbage avocado pieces in here.
And people think that I am the bougie pit guy.
You are the bougie pit guy.
Yeah. I've never eaten sushi in my life, man.
Well, you have the palate of a 9-year-old.
Ain't nothing wrong with the chicken tendies.
Yeah. You have the palate of a 9-year-old.
I guess you're eating the chicken tendy of the sea.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of.
Although we are in the middle of Colorado.
Yes.
Eating raw fish.
Well, anyway, great opening.
Yeah.
Way to go. We didn't even script that, folks.
Nope.
Yeah, so we're back. We got an announcement to make tonight.
Yeah.
Who's going to win the North Lights giveaway?
Yeah, I am excited to see who this lucky person may be.
We will we'll get to that here shortly. But yeah, got a good show tonight. Other than that, we're going to have Zach Pollard on. He calls himself an East Coast cowboy.
Hmm.
I don't know what that means. He probably microwaves his bacon.
There's not cows in the East, is there?
I don't know if there's even bacon in the East.
Hmm. Dude, the East is a weird place to me. Like, it's trees. I don't even know how people live there. There's trees, and there's rust. And then there's some more rust, and there's more trees. And there's people everywhere. Like, you just drive, and everywhere you drive, there's a house of some kind. I don't understand out East. It's just a weird place to me. I am intrigued by it, though.
Is that where the homeless come from? I don't know.
No, those come from Denver.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Downtown, man. So, pardon me. I'm just licking off me some wasabi sauce. I gotta tell you about my adventure down in Denver. So, we had to go to Children's Hospital, which is like over in Aurora, or as we like to call it, Saudi Aurora. And, get done. And I'm like, oh, well, shoot. I'll just head straight west back to the mountains via Colfax. And for those of you who don't know, Colfax is like a old-timey historic street that kind of cuts through.
It used to be.
Well, it still is. It's like one of the first streets in that area. Anyway, so it goes like straight through the middle, smack dab of downtown, right across the front of the Capitol building. And I'm in my dually. Because I was picking up some tires and wheels from Tom Prendergast on the way home. And I decided to go head west on Colfax. Terrible
mistake.
Idea. Colfax gets super narrow.
I obviously was not because I would have never.
It's in the middle of downtown. Yeah. These dudes on freaking crotch rockets are like cutting lanes and get all pissed off because they can't cut around my dually fender. And they're running red lights, and it was just the Wild West, and it was crazy. So that's my story about Cole. And then.
I was going to say, I expected more from this story, man.
All right, so then, on my way home, swung by this gentleman's house because I picked up my Ford GT500 Supercharger, which is going to sit on top of my 5.3 Vortec inside my 2006 Suburban, a.k.a. the Sleeper Bourbon.
So everybody that missed all that, because you were talking really fast, he's going to take a used supercharger from a Mustang, and he's going to put it on a crappy Chevy motor with homemade nitrous.
Pretty much the greatest motor platform ever developed, the LS platform. It's an Eaton M122 supercharger. It's going to be pretty great. That's all I can say. It's going to be great when I'm freaking burning rubber at the drop-off lane at this elementary school when I drop the girls off in the morning.
That will be cool, yes.
And all the mommies are going to be like, ugh, he's such a rebel. And it's going to be glorious and weird, and the principal's going to yell at me.
You think the principal will yell at you?
Probably. Actually, I don't drop the kids off at school in the morning. I don't know what I'm talking about. Anyway, there's some excitement there.
Pardon the noise. We're recording with the garage door open and my family just got home.
What else happened?
This is much more authentic, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
You'll get to hear about Parker's machine pitch practice.
Mm.
Pretty incredible stuff.
For a minute, practice.
It's a great lesson in patience for an adult.
Oh, I hate avocados.
Ugh.
Anyway,
Oh, look at that. Did my wife bring pizza home? Maybe. Mm-hmm. Is that pizza?
Just stuffed cheesy bread.
Where's the pizza? Bread. Oh, we have pizza upstairs.
So at least we have fresh cheesy
bread. Fresh cheesy bread.
Now you can listen to me eat pizza while Hopper
eats sushi.
Has reactions from his sushi.
What was I going to say? I was going to say something.
Authentic, man. People have told me they love the organic, authentic podcasts that we put together. Like, two people told me that.
Two people?
Yep.
Of the three that listen?
Probably. you got another random fan off YouTube that you met the other day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the guy I bought the supercharger from. Roundabout way, we come to find out he watches my channel. That was cool. There was something else I was gonna bring up. All right. People, you need to buy yourself a crawler hauler. I'm trying to sell my crawler hauler.
Oh yeah, we posted this on our social media.
Yep. So you need to buy it. It's a pretty great deal. I'm willing to negotiate. I think the problem is, like, I've got with this COVID happening, I've gotten used to buying low and selling high. I've forgotten that most of the time, you're supposed to sell with depreciation. So I'm a little miffed that no one's buying my crawler hauler because I listed it for more than I bought it. But if you're listening and you want it, I'm ready to deal.
Beautiful unit.
And the reason I'm selling is because I need a motorhome, because I'm sick and tired of making 600 bathroom stops every 5 miles. I have little girls. That's what happens. You gotta make lots of bathroom stops. So you have a motorhome, you just do it internally. I had a dude who was in Beaumont, Texas, interested, and he offered me $17,000 if I drove it to him. I was like, hell no. I'm not gonna take a cut and drive it for 20 hours or however long Beaumont is. It's pretty much next to Houston. I don't even know where that is. But, yeah. So anyway, it's for sale. Buy it. You should.
Yeah, we got some work to do on our race car. We got Visions coming up. I'm sure a lot of you folks listening to this are on your way to or from Visions. Big race next week. We will not actually be there. Just didn't really work for the schedule.
I'll be honest, I am pretty bummed.
Well, you weren't bummed when we talked about how hot it was going
to
be.
No, I'm bummed because I don't get to see my people. I am not missing paying the fuel charges and driving out there. And then it is very expensive to get in. I'm not missing paying entry fees. I'm not missing the temperature. I'm not missing the humidity. And I'm definitely not missing the dust. Otherwise, I'm missing everything else.
Well, it's a cloudy and overcast here at our place in Colorado. It's about 55 degrees mm-hmm. right now. It's been like this for 2 weeks. It's kind of nice.
Monsoons, man.
It's hard to want to leave where we live now, like this time of year, because this is like the ticket.
I was freezing to death last night. I forgot my hoodie, and I thought I was going to freeze.
Yeah.
Mmm. Man, this is the best part of the sushi. You get to the bottom, it's got the little crunchies and the wasabis. Mmm. And the soy sauces and the little... Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Mmm.
I'm kind of tired, man. It's been a long week. I don't know why. Work hasn't been hard for me anyway. Probably for you.
Work's been weirdly busy. It's like... Yeah. I made it, though. It's my half day tomorrow. gotta give a big shout out. So, those of you who listen for a while know that there's three of us. Like, it's Zach and I, and then there's this guy, he's usually in the background. His name's Jeff.
Worst guest ever.
The worst guest ever.
Statistically, still accurate.
Yes. But we like him. He's a good dude. Sometimes he brings a lot of drama to our group just because, you know, he's high strung. He whines a lot. He's always freaking out about something. I'm describing myself there. It's funny because it's not him. That's me. But anyway, big shout out, Jeff, because it's your birthday today. Happy birthday, Jeff.
Yep.
You also should wish him happy birthday, Zach.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Happy birthday. We texted. We already talked today.
Yes, we did, but...
I'm more concerned about whose birthday it is in a couple of days. Dave's birthday it is today.
Christmas? Jesus's birthday
no,
is...
No, my wife's birthday is this weekend.
Well, it's not today. Stop stealing Jeff's thunder. You'll give your darling wife a shout-out when it's her birthday.
Well, it's pretty much her birthday because she has birthday weeks.
Oh.
She's one of those.
One of those.
Yep.
I mean, most of the year is a celebration of myself to me, so I live in a perpetual birthday. But happy upcoming birthday, Casey.
We can't be doing too many birthday shout-outs. All of a sudden, we're going to have Casey Gilbert messaging us. Ah, you didn't tell me it was my birthday.
Well, it is also JT's birthday. JT.
Oh, yeah. Happy birthday to JT.
Happy birthday. Out there putting on a killer course. I saw the new course map. It looks like, looks a lot like Candyland. I'm really jealous, really, really jealous that everyone gets to race this.
Now, I want to know if there's some of these either ors that might be like
Gumdrop Mountain.
Aren't there, is Candyland the one that has like the little cheater slide move you can make to cut ahead?
I mean, sure, it depends on who you are. There's a lot of cheater slides.
Am I thinking of Chutes and Ladders? I think I'm thinking of Chutes and Ladders.
Or Mousetrap?
Now, JT would build a course that's like Mousetrap. I could appreciate that. Mm.
Anyway.
No Candyland here, man.
No, this is Colorado. We have other types of lands here.
What else has been going on?
So,
we didn't have an episode last week because...
Yeah,
because
you forgot.
I totally just forgot.
So, I mean, the biggest thing that I've been dealing with all week is I bought a new pickup. I bought a 2002 GMC Sierra 2500.
See Hopper's Facebook for a glam shot of him in front of the truck. I'm sure you'll all want to see that.
Yeah.
It's a little confusing. I'll just leave it at that.
Most of life is confusing,
yes.
Zach. Anyway, so...
You're trying to find your identity, and we're okay with that.
I know my identity. Mm-hmm. Excellence in engineering. You notice I don't wear a Volkswagen hat around. Sorry, Chris Ferris. If you're listening, nothing against the V10 Tourage. I just said that kind of off the cuff. Anyway, so it's got a 6-liter LQ9 V8. It's got the 4L80E transmission, kind of a project truck, which is what I like. So we're doing some work. We're putting her together. It's going to be a kind of a daily driver for when I start in earnest the sleeper bourbon build. And then after that, subsequent, have to... replace the rear end, stuff like that, because I blow it apart trying to beat boomers and Corvettes. So that's fun. I'm excited about that. And then I'm shopping for motorhomes. Like, I'm looking for different options out there. Life's good. I've been spending some time on Marketplace.
We've had a few nice evenings at home, not working on stuff with the families.
Maybe you have. I haven't.
I thought it was nice.
I've been working on stuff left and right. I never
stop.
Oh,
man. Here we go. Here we go. Well, we should probably give the people what they want.
Yeah.
We should probably let them know who...
Enough about us.
Yeah.
enough about us.
Let's talk about making somebody's life a little bit better.
A little bit brighter?
A little bit brighter. Oh, why did I think of the day? good work.
Yeah.
Good work. Way to put those together.
Well, what do we got?
Well, we're, as most of you know, we teamed up with North Lights. We've got some of their lights on our race car. I've got the light bar on my Razor, the AIM light bar, which is actually pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I can actually change my light bar lights from flood to spot.
That's cool.
Go back and forth, and they have an LED light in there. You can pick the color.
Yep.
So, of course, you know, the boy and the mama chose the blue.
The boy and the wife unit?
Yep. So they get the blue LEDs on there. It's a real nice light. We teamed up with them. They're going to give away a set of pod lights.
Mm-hmm.
And some of you folks entered.
Yep.
We had you sign up on Facebook and Instagram, share some pictures of your rides. We had a really good...
The suspense is killing me. Just out with it.
All right. Well, we had a very scientific way of picking who won this. It involved my son picking a random number. And so the lucky winner is Cody Strobes.
Congratulations, Cody.
Yes, that was very awkward once we announced that. Cody... He's a follower. I think he lives out in Texas, but he's one of them Arkansas boys.
Oh, man.
So, Cody, we're going to message you. We're going to get a hold of you. All of you other people that entered, unless I directly message you, do not fall for these scams that say, send us money because you're a winner. Actually, maybe we should get people to send us money.
Yeah, so if you're listening to this, send me money because I'm a winner.
Yes. And we're splitting that 50-50, right?
You, every time we get money for stuff, you always keep it. I have to fight you to get my half. I still am missing half of that one hundo.
I gave that to you.
No, you didn't.
You did not accept. Anyway, regardless. Here we are talking about ourselves again.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Our buddy Cody just won some new spotlights.
Congratulations, Cody.
We're going to get with him. We're going to get with North Lights. And we're going to get them sent over to you, man. That was a cool giveaway. We need to work on the next one. Everybody out there wants to team up with us and give away a cool product.
Or just give Hopper money.
Yeah, or if you just want to give Hopper money. Sorry, Chuck Crossland, this does not apply to you because we do not do those kinds of things here. This is a family show.
This one is tune in later tonight for the non-family version.
Then Chuck can send you the money.
Yep.
Okay. Gotcha.
Chuck gets whatever he wants.
I'm trying to eat my dinner here, man.
I don't think Chuck listens to this.
Oh, I bet he does.
He probably doesn't. I mean, if he was smart, he wouldn't. Listening does just blabber about stuff.
But it's Chuck. He is probably on his way to Oklahoma. He's probably going to get there in about 2 weeks, based off of last year. So, yeah. Anyway, thanks for tuning in tonight. We're going to... get a little bit of a shout out from a sponsor here. Again, congratulations to Cody. Way to go, man. And we're going to call up Zach Pollard here. Mr. East Coast Cowboy Can-Am guy. Should be an interesting one. You guys are going to want to stay on the line and hear what he has to say. I want to take a minute to give a huge shout out to our newest sponsor. The Colorado Land, Kansas Land, and Nebraska Land Tire and Service Group. These guys have not only helped me out when it comes to getting new wheels and tires, but they are also huge fans of racing. NASCAR, local dirt track racing, or off-road racing, these folks go above and beyond to support racers at all levels. Whether it's on your race car or your truck and trailer, these guys care. Find the nearest location by going to www.thetirestore.com.
All right, here we are.
Yes, back for the guest segment tonight, Zach Pollard. Dude, I guess I don't even know where you're from. From the East. Is the East like one big city? I don't know. You tell us.
So I'm originally from Georgia, a small town, Winder, Georgia, just outside of Athens, Georgia, for those that know anything about Georgia. I've been in the military now for just coming up on 7 years. So I'm on Fort Bragg in North Carolina right now, heading back to Georgia here, maybe in a year or two. So we're up and down the East Coast.
So we didn't even realize this about you, that you were in the military. Like, you're currently in the military.
Yes, sir. Been in, like I said, about 7 years. Just doing my thing. I'm active duty, so making these races is kind of difficult sometimes, but we make it work.
So what's your MOS?
So I'm an intel guy. I've done intel now for 6 years, in special operations on BRAC.
Cool.
Well,
Awesome. A couple of my siblings have been my one two of my brothers are both 11 Bra started as 11 Bravo, and then my one brother, he's almost got his 20 years. He's a recruiter. So he's a professional liar. And then my other brother actually medicaled out. He was diagnosed with something, so he was able to get out with lifetime benefits after 5 years, 6 years, something like that. Anyway, so thank you for your service. Appreciate it. Like I said, I got two siblings to do it, so.
I appreciate it very much. Yeah, I mean, he serving, 20 years and the medical discharge, well, he deserved it, if he served
Yeah.
honorably. That's how I feel about it, Some people kind of shy away from that kind of discharge. And to some degree, I kind of understand it because the kind of people the military attracts. But at the end of the day, you
Well,
sacrifice your
it's
body, mind, and time. That is what it is.
yeah, his wasn't so much like, oh, I hurt my back. He was diagnosed with MS, so it was kind of like,
Yeah.
oh yeah, you got it. And he's like, I like the army, I don't want to leave. And you're like, sorry man, you gotta leave. So they kind of kicked him out. He didn't want to leave, but oh well. He's living his best life up in Wisconsin running chainsaws now. So oh well.
That's good. And I wouldn't trade the experience of being in for anything. Definitely worth it. So.
That's crazy, man, because I had no idea. I guess I never asked you like what you did. Obviously we know you from going to races, and yeah, that's kind of cool. I guess that's why we have the show and bring these people on. We already learned something new.
So how did you I always like to get people's stories, how did you start? But what drew you to the army? How did you get started in the army? And was that in conjunction with off-roading? Like, tell us a little bit about how you got started.
So as far as the army goes, I'll be honest, ever since I was a kid, I wanted to join in whatever capacity that, could have been Navy, Marine Corps, Army. Was never going to join the Air Force. No offense. That's just not really my speed. I saw that we could jump out of airplanes if I joined the Army, and said, all right, I'll sign up for that. So joined up, started jumping out of airplanes, got used to a little bit of the adrenaline junkie side of life. Once things began to slow down, no more deployments, none of that for me. Racing became a viable option. Had a little bit of coin saved up. Met up with one of my good buddies, Kyle Sturkey. He's former Army as well, right here on Fort Bragg. We just said, hey, let's go to Hammers. So we went from no racing experience whatsoever, no sponsorships, to loading up in an old Ram 2500 with a 20-year-old trailer and trekking from North Carolina to California on a whim. So that's basically a short synopsis from Army to racing, and that kind of kicked it off from there. Find out I could get that rush through racing,
So were you what how did you start in the off-roading? Like, was that something that you were doing before the army, or how'd that work?
Yeah, I've been playing with Jeeps since I was real young. First vehicle ever was a Jeep ZJ. It wasn't even a Wrangler, because you could
Yeah,
pick them
he
up for
knows
like
the CJ. Yes.
you could pick them up for like $500. So I got that inline six, and just started beating the heck out of it. Thought I was the coolest thing on the block with 33-inch tires used on Facebook Marketplace, 15, 16 years old, just beating it up. So that's kind of where I started. And then I started meeting up with Jeeper groups, in Georgia and up in North Georgia, playing around in the mountains and stuff. And it was just a cool crowd to hang out with. So that's basically how I got started in off-roading, and it no lockers, just playing in the mud, climbing hills, acting a fool, And then once you grow up, I say you never really grow up, you just get older and get more money.
Yeah.
So that's
Well, wait, I'm waiting on the more money part, man. I'm old. I ain't get no money.
this is a prime example that we don't grow up, our toys just get bigger and badder.
Well,
So
that's
that's
very accurate. Yes.
That's basically what happened. So
Is there, well, I know we've talked to several of the guys out there from Georgia and North Carolina. What's the riding like out there? Like, what are you doing for rec riding out there?
So I actually started with four wheelers and stuff, probably 4 years ago. And most of that, honestly, is just mud. That's basically how I met some of the community that we're in now, is mud racing. So yeah, I'd say most of the recreational riding around here, it's boring trails and mud holes. And that's pretty much all we have. You got to drive 2 hours west to really hit any hills or rock at all. So we don't get a lot of practice or anything for the ultra four style stuff out here, especially down near the coast, where we are. So.
So you're on four wheelers. I mean, I'm a UTV guy. Hopper hates them.
I don't hate them. I
You
just
hate them,
dislike
yes.
them
Even
somewhat.
though he owns them. How did you get into side by sides? What was my section?
So basically what happened is there was a guy named Robert Parker. I'm sure you guys are familiar with him. Everybody's familiar with him. Awesome guy. I used to go watch Robert Parker race mud races all around. We'd go down to Georgia. Sometimes I'd get the chance to participate in them and whatever I had. And he was just killing it, right? So I met Robert and I thought, man, I want to do what that guy's doing. Then I saw some of the other guys, Byron Surratt, Team 904 down in Florida. They'd come up and race mud racing as well. And I saw some of their side by sides, big power, big tires, just putting on a show. And I love the showmanship side of it as well. And I just wanted to find a way to get into it somehow. I didn't at the time have the experience at all. I knew nothing. I didn't have the money as far as this kind of, riding goes, or side by sides and side by side performance. I had no experience. Didn't really have any money either. So I basically just bought like a $7,000 beat up rolled X3 64-inch 2017 car. Absolute piece of crap, no exhaust. It was just loud, and I beat the crap out of it and just used it to have fun while I learned on it. That's basically how I got into side by sides, was just some of these guys that inspired me to get into it, especially Robert Parker. With the racing side of it, I always thought I would do good if I could get my foot in the door. And that mud racing turned into, hey, let's it wasn't even a let's. I heard that they wanted to go race King of the Hammers, and I offered to come along. I was like, hey, I've watched King of the Hammers, on YouTube and other stuff for years. I'd love to be a part of it. Can I tag along with the team? Heck, I'll even co-drive. They basically said, hey, there's no room on the team. And I said, all right, well, I'll see you there. And somebody made the comment to me, you ain't got the money to get there. And I said, all right, I'll see you on the starting line. And that's really what lit the fire into getting us out there. So somebody told me I couldn't do it. So I said, all right, we're going to make this
Man,
happen.
I'm familiar with this. I know people that are motivated by being made no, or that's a dumb idea. That's the only feedback I'm going to get from you, man.
Zach, you tell me everything of mine. All of my ideas are dumb. I'm just used to it. I too used
I gave him, I slipped up and I told him why I told him I do that. It's reverse psychology, man. It freaking works.
Dude, I'm seriously, if you tell me I can't do it, my immediate thought is bet against me.
Yeah.
Bet against me. Let's see. And it took absolutely everything to make Hammers happen that first year. So many people don't, we haven't been around very long. I mean, we raced Hammers in 2021. That's it. And that season we raced one other race. Life got in the way, Army got in the way. This year we've gone full bore and we're racing every race east to west coast. But at the time, no sponsors. I was out of pocket. I think we rolled back into North Carolina. I had like $40 in my pocket. I was depleted. So
So you said you're racing every race east and west coast? Is that
yep.
what I Dang.
Everywhere. Yep.
That's
The main lesson I learned last year, man, is there's really no point in even showing up to these races unless you're all in. You show up half cocked, it's really just not worth showing up. The competition is so stacked. these guys are very dedicated. You got guys that are racing for a living, basically. They got reputations, time, and money on the line. And if you don't show up with all you got, there's no point in you being there. So with that in mind, you know, Kyle and I just talked about it. We said, look, if we run hammers, let's come home and let's just start running every Ultra 4 race they got. So that's what we're doing. So we're gearing up for, you know, Visions in Oklahoma, and we're leaving Sunday. So
it's kind of interesting that you say that. Like, what I've obviously, we're not racing, right? Well, we kind of are now that we have a race car, but it's a little different. But I do feel like when you're at the races, the more races you're at, the more recognition you get, the more familiar people get with you. It's those guys that show up to one race, maybe two races, and they're part of the group, but they're kind of on the outside of that circle. When you start showing up to all these races, like, it's immediately in the inner circle of the inner circle world.
Well, it's your family, right? You know, yeah. Like, you're building an even bigger family than we have, because, you know, we're pretty strictly just West people. West, you know, you're doing everything. Like, you're meeting a lot of people. You're growing that circle. You're just part of a bigger family than we are.
You know,
that's pretty cool.
We don't want to start anything and not finish it. If we're going to do this, we want to be all in. We want to be the very best. And that doesn't necessarily mean winning every race.
Sure.
Kyle Chaney, Paul Wolf, I can make a list for you off the top of my head. These guys are really, really good at what they do. You know, Kyle's getting seat time, what, almost every weekend? Don't quote me on that, but you know he races a lot. They're very hard to beat. But what we can do is we can network. We can build relations in good faith. We can do right by our sponsors and just continue to grow. You know, I would rather grow slowly with a strong foundation than grow and blow up overnight over a big win, you know? So that's pretty much our strategy. Now, I do go out there and I push it as hard as I can. We try to make the car the fastest car on the track. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes we barrel roll it or hit a tree doing 60. It just, you know, crap happens.
Yeah. That's how, I mean, obviously, we watch the races we're not at. When we are at the races, we're trying to talk to as many people as possible. So I've seen your name, right? Your name's on that list. You're getting some good finishes. But I'm not going to lie, man. It was really Rush that made you jump out to me this year, because you had, like, probably one of the more exciting races and interviews I've seen in a while. Nothing about Ultra 4 racing is vanilla, but, you know, you definitely stood out at Rush this year. You came in off a pretty good – I mean, how was your KOH was pretty good this year.
Yeah, KOH was pretty good. Beat out a lot of people we needed to beat out. Landed where we wanted to. Pretty much, as far as KOH goes, don't want to stop you on the Rush stuff, but as far as KOH goes, I think – the first year, we just needed to get there and figure out what was going on. We had no clue what we were getting into. The second year, we did a lot of homework between 21 and 2022. We came in with some fresh ideas that I know a lot of people just hadn't even thought of or tried. And a lot of people told us wouldn't work. We implemented them. We found our formula. We're tweaking the formula a little bit for 2023. But I think we're in our groove. So we're lined up, as long as luck stays on our side, with a lot of hard work, we're lined up to do well in 2023. But yeah, coming off a good KOH finish, Rush, we had pretty high hopes, and they were crushed.
Well, your hopes were crushed, maybe, but you were also crushed.
Yeah, no, that was a hard freaking hit. It was a hard hit.
So
a brick wall.
Basically, folks that didn't watch the race or follow the live feed, you're in your you're hauling ass, and you, like, I don't even know what you would say. You didn't even smoke the tree, man, right? Did the tree even move? You tell me.
No, it was pretty sure it was a hardwood. It felt pretty hard when I hit it. It didn't move. I was passing a razor on the right-hand side, and for those that are familiar with the course at Rush, we were passing, I think, through, like, a power line area, So it's pretty wide open. And I just had it, you know, held to the floor. And this car's got a little bit of juice in it this year. So it got up to speed quick, passing this razor on the right. And this tree just snuck up on me, you know. Passed it 100 times before, no big issues. And I caught it, you know, right inside the driver's side tire. So I was right in line with it in the driver's seat. I honestly was probably doing 55, 60, somewhere in there. Hit it so hard, I immediately blacked out. Didn't really know what had happened. You know, when you take a hard hit like that, you kind of come to and you don't really know what's going on yet. But I kept getting rear-ended because people were coming around the corner and hitting me and running over my back rear tire and stuff. And somebody ran up to my window and was like, "Hey, are you okay?" And I was like, I think I'm good. And then my arm just started hurting real bad. And I was like, man, I looked down and my steering wheel was all bent up. And I just yelled out.
Yes, I saw this.
And then I tried to like move around and I was like, man, my seat's not attached to the frame anymore. I was like, oh my golly. And I tried to start the car, wouldn't start, you know, still kind of dazed. I crawled out through like the windshield area and kind of walked around for a little while. And then it dawned on me after I'd come out of my daze, like I'm in the middle of a race. I got to get back in the car. So the course official, whoever it was trying to stop me. And I just jumped back in the car and I said, I got to go. Car wouldn't start. It ended up ripping a wiring harness apart down in the center console area and had to just lean over and I started stripping wires with my teeth and like hand twisting them back together to get the car to start. And the car finally started and I just took off. Well, a couple minutes after I took off, realized the front of the car was hanging off. Every time I go over a bump, it just opened up. It broke the frame everywhere for those that have seen the photos, you know. It was a hard hit. The whole front end was 8 inches pointed to the left, you know, from center line. So hard hit. But I finished, you know, I lost the glove. So every time I drove by an official or I came down the hill, I'd like hide one hand. Then I had a glove. So I just drive it with one hand. You know, and of course one hand was a little gimpy. So
yeah. So then you get to do an interview with Miles and and I'm like, who is the guy doing an interview with his arm in a sling? What the heck? And then like, oh, this is the guy that just hit that immovable object. And the pictures from your car, man, were insane. Like literally every weld on the front part of your chassis was gone or ripped out.
Yeah. And what was even crazier is the solid tubes, you know, where there's no bend or anything. They were just sheared off. You know, I love Can-Ams. People will say the frames are a weak point. Sure. They're not designed in stock form to be, you know, loaded down with another 200 to 300 pounds minimum in gear, throwing a big set of tires, big power, and then beat the crap out of them. They're not designed for that.
Well, nothing's designed to hit a 360, man.
Yeah, no, that's for sure, man, for sure. We run a stock chassis for a specific reason. I mean, we like them very light, and we like that it's easy to swap out. You don't have much invested in each chassis. I mean, we swap that chassis out in 2 days. We're really good on the platform, so it's easier for us to run a stock chassis that's light and break it and just have one on standby and swap it out in 2 days than it is to have a new $20,000 chassis built every time. So that's why we do that, you know, and it's no big deal that it broke. We swapped it out.
I started in the snowmobile game, backcountry snowmobiling, same thing, like weight. I mean, we're talking like pounds. Mm-hmm. A couple of pounds is a different thinker in that world. And guys would come into the shop all the time, this stupid A-arm, this stupid frame. And it's like, man, there has to be a weak point. You can't engineer something to not have a weak point and then have an impact like that. The energy has to go somewhere. So I would always tell guys when they smoked a $400 A-arm, you're lucky. Yeah. Because I can put a new $400 A-arm on in 15 minutes, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's funny you say that. People always say, oh, man, you know, those A-arms you run, they're really strong, but wouldn't you have wanted the A-arm to break first? And I say, well, do you want to buy a new set of $3,500 A-arms or do you want to buy another $2,800 frame?
Dude, that's the Grom life right there. Yeah. You know that a Honda Grom chassis from Honda only costs like $130.
Well, the one we got was $98 on sale.
Yeah. brand new.
Yeah.
And so, like you said, if you're familiar with how to do it, I mean, yeah, it's just part of having a race car.
Yeah, man. And that's the fun of it. You know, a lot of these guys out here, I say a lot. I shouldn't say a lot. Some of them don't build their own stuff, you know. And it's not to say they're not qualified or capable of building their own stuff, but they just don't. But we do. I mean, if it's on the car, we've worked with the company directly. We've installed it ourselves. And anything outside of that, we've fabricated. Or, you know, or work closely with a fabricator with great experience and built relationships that way. So we do everything hands-on, every single thing. Mount the tires, rebuild the axles. We do everything hands-on. So we have a lot more pride in our car, you know, than somebody that maybe, you know, had a $70,000 to $80,000 car built for them. They go beat it up and then pay to have it fixed, you know.
I'm with you because we are very similar. That's how we like to do it. I'm always conflicted when you show up to these races, man, and you look at teams and you're like, I know they don't have half the time in the car that we do. Yeah. And that's cool. That's great. Like you said, I'm not knocking those guys. And the life style could be very different than mine or ours, but you can always tell the guys too that do and the struggle to get there. And you always just kind of want to pull for those guys a little bit more, I feel like. You know,
no, for sure, man. I have great respect, especially for the guys that are in class with us in ProMod. Even guys that at some point I've butted heads with, I still have, you know, the utmost respect for them. Because I know from my personal experience over the last couple of years what it took me to get to where I am now. And I know some of these guys are ahead of me, so I know they put in a lot more work than I have. So regardless of my personal opinion on their personality or decisions they make, I completely respect them for what they're doing. So, that doesn't just go for ProMod. I'm obviously closer with those guys. That goes for open and stock class. You know, Aaron Lynch, racing with us now. He's homegrown, home built, owns his own shop now, you know, doing motorcycles and now side by side stuff. We're racing alongside each other. I got the same respect for him, you know.
Well, it's kind of like the, unspoken rule of Ultra 4, right? Like, we can all mess with each other, but like if some other guy from outside comes in, then it's all over, man. We're all one group then. That's kind of one of the cool things about Ultra 4, even class to class, man. I mean, we don't race 4600 or 4800, but man, I know that we're good enough friends with some of those guys. Well,
they're still our people.
Yeah, we'll back them up even if when we get to the race we give them a lot of shit. I mean, I'm gonna take two shots at one guy tonight, but we'd even stand up for Chuck Crossland. Maybe not in a Walmart parking lot after dark,
maybe,
but If his horn is stuck on his motorhome when he's getting to the races, we'll help him try to figure that out.
And we'll also pretend we don't know him.
Yeah, that too. Yeah. Chuck knows me. Yeah. But Chuck also introduced us to Randy, the nicest guy in the world.
Oh, my God.
So we got credit for that. But
well, hopefully the 4400 will be our new family too here.
We don't typically talk about controversial things, but it's been a few days.
Yeah.
I feel like the controversialness has worn off.
This is a big step for Zach right now because Zach avoids controversy at all costs. Continue.
But we had some new rules drop this week. We should talk about it because this is an Ultra 4 show.
Yeah.
This is probably the funniest part of the whole thing. One of the rules they introduced this week is, hey, you got to have a winch on your car at all the races, okay? Some guys take them off for weight. I'm not an engineer. I'm just a guy that works for a living. You got to be kidding me if the weight of that winch is going to get you the difference between first place and second place. I mean,
you have to realize there's road bikers out there that shave stays off their bike chassis because it saves grand.
I don't get it. I have a winch on my Razor that I have never ever used, but it's there. Anyway, the best part about the winch thing I saw this week was some guy calling BS on the synthetic rope part of the rule. He said that he did not like synthetic rope and that it was more just than the steel cable.
Who even uses steel cable anymore?
My idea. One guy picked that hill to die on.
I have steel cable on like my trailer winches, but that's because it's cheap and you don't think about it. But I'll never go back to steel cable.
You want? I'll tell you what happened. Hammers 21. I wish I had a steel cable on my winch. I wish. I got stuck in a bad spot, and there was no good place to winch from. I didn't have any mats to lay down or snatch blocks or anything. And I had to pull at a weird angle, and the synthetic line rubbed a rock. I mean, yeah. It was 3 inches away from missing it. It rubbed the rock, snapped the line. I didn't have a long enough line to recover. Tried to, you know, power break out of the rocks and broke all four axles in the front diff. And it cost me my hammers. So if I had a steel line on that winch, it probably would have pulled me out.
We need to introduce you to our buddy Justin from Factor 5. He can show you how to fix that problem in 2 minutes.
Well, still the problem's still there. He's just telling you how to fix the aftermath. You can,
we spent 2 hours watching that dude splice synthetic rope together.
Oh no. Somebody told me that. Nah, I ain't doing that.
I can do it. We've done it. We've become experts. I mean, it's better than time. It's with the right tool, it's really not bad.
Well, and then you just got to invest in that bougie winch rope that's got like the crust on the outside. It's but it's like crusty. Anyway,
back to the rules. That was like the funniest one of all of them. Okay.
Yeah.
You want to run a winch? Sure. I don't think there needs to be a rule. If you don't want to run a winch, whatever.
How about this? Make courses. I think I'm going to speak for Cole Clark here, and this is going to be controversial. But make courses that you need to use a winch on. I'm going to regret that, but I'm going to regret it. But if you're going to make us have a winch,
it is logic. The response that I liked was somebody told, maybe they told Lauren Healy, I can't remember whose post, just put the winch in the back of the car. They didn't tell you where you had to put it. They didn't even tell you. Did it say that it had to function? I don't know. I don't even know if it had to be bolted on. Could you just throw it in a tool bag?
Probably not.
No, somebody tried. Who was it that used a come along? They put a come along in the car and tried to pass it as their winch. I can't remember who it was.
I want to talk about scary, man. I have nightmares about come alongs.
Dude. Yeah.
No, thank you. So I agree with you, man. If you think a winch needs to be on the car, like, give us something to winch over. Now, that brought up the whole other conversation, like, because we do race some short courses, you know, like, is anybody going to safely winch in at Crandon? No way. You start pulling winch line at Crandon, and the officials are going to have you off the track so fast.
Yeah, like, they're going to like, get out of the way before you die.
Yeah. So I remember that. You set in like created rule, like maybe related to safety. I don't know. Somebody must have complained, and so they felt like they had to address it. The other rule that they imposed was the more interesting, though.
Yeah, I like it.
So they imposed a 37-inch tire rule for 4,400 class. I go back and forth on this one personally. See,
here's the thing about me. Like, Zach's really gotten me into race history. Like, NASCAR and, you know, racing in general. Ooh, Lamar stuff.
24-hour of Lamar this weekend, by the
way. I was watching Ford versus Ferrari last night.
24 hours. Such a good freaking show.
Anyway, total tangent.
But you look at how racing was born, and the whole idea behind racing is kind of this outlaw rule breaking.
Don't call it cheating. It's not cheating.
I don't like rules.
It's rules, innovating.
Rules kill things. Rules kill sports. You look at NHL. You look at NASCAR. You look at all these sports. Like, I don't drive. I'm not a racer. I build stuff. I'm not a racer. So But I understand that there's risk, and people are like, well, it's all about coming home at the end of the day. I get it. You know, I've got lots of friends that are into extreme sports. I have a personal friend that I lost years ago, Ryan. He was into that nap of the earth, like wingsuit, Red Bull, skydiving, and he was killed in an accident. I've got other friends in other extreme sports that were killed, and I miss them. They're good dudes. But you would, you know,
you're not doing that.
You're not doing it because it's safe. And then here we go. Like, hey, let's just start adding rules and adding rules and adding rules. I don't like it. I personally, Hopper Becker personally does not like the direction of rules.
What a rebel. What a rebel.
Biggest weenie of a rebel you've ever met.
I am a rebel without a cause.
I do not like rules.
I like rules so that there can be innovation and creativity to navigate some of those rules.
Circumcised sure. rules?
Which I think is what we're going to see here. I will also say this. This is part of my part. I don't know that the 36-inch rule on the tires was directly created to keep UTVs out of 44.
Yeah, we don't
I
know.
I don't know because I'm not in the room. I know that's what everybody wants to jump on and say, but I just don't know. But if that's the case too, then why the rule? I mean, is something happening in 4400 that we don't know about? Very possible.
Here's Zach Pollard's personal opinion and my thoughts on the subject. There were two rules that came out for 4400 specific, the 3-inch and 3/4 120 wall DOM cage rule. 100% get it. Safety is paramount. Yep.
Not complaining about having to do that. We're all making cages and chassis anyway.
Yep. And I mean, to be honest with you, most of the cages out there, especially on these, you know, fast cars are already at 1-3/4 DOM. So a lot of them are, not all of them. As far as the 37-inch tire rule goes, what has been told to me when I basically confronted some people like, hey, what's up with this rule? It was basically said this was a unwritten rule for the longest, and we are now putting it on paper. I don't think that's wrong. I think that is true. However, I think what prompted it was a large push from UTV drivers. And I know over the past week, there has been a push by UTV drivers to get us into the 4400 class, because like you guys were just saying, you know, racing is kind of a, you race the rule book, you know, you're reading in between the lines and figuring out what the rule book says, but you also know what the rule book doesn't say. And if we're going to be showing up to these races, you know, like I said, East to West Coast, every race costs us $5,000 in travel and lodging, then we're going to get every penny out of it. We're all the experience and seat time and penny out of it we can, you know, and the 4400 class right now is regarded as the premier class. But a lot of the UTV drivers, including myself, will tell you, we think the UTV should be the premier class. We're bringing in the most racers. We're bringing in a lot of money. You go look at average lap times from, let's say, Montana. You know, don't quote me on this either. I think Kyle's time beat, Cheney's time beat the 4400s. And a lot of the average times from, you know, just the top five fastest guys were still faster than the 4400. So why not push to get the UTVs in the 4400? However, I understand the flip side from the 4400 drivers. I think the unspoken fear here is that these guys have $250,000 cars, some of them the fast ones, you know, $250,000 cars, independent front suspension, a lot of power, or more. You know, I've never built one, so I can't tell you the price of them. But
We're looking at some $1 million cars on some.
No, for sure. Probably, man. Probably. I don't want to misvalue them. But I don't think they want to get beat by a $70,000 X3. I just don't think they want to see it. And it wouldn't be good for them, wouldn't be good for their sport. It wouldn't be good for the sport. I'll be honest, it would not be good for the sport.
Well, I disagree, because here's where the hang-ups were.
Yeah.
Unlimited class is unlimited.
Yep.
And if a guy brings in a freaking car with wings and people don't like it because it's not how it's been for 15 years, and the car with wings wins, hey, man, somebody developed a new technology or a new design. It's unlimited. It's not 4,900. It's not 4,400 or 4,600. It's unlimited.
That's for me the biggest, I guess you could say, I wouldn't say a hang up, but the biggest check in my brain is, if it's truly not unlimited, don't call it unlimited. Yeah. Just say this is the high horsepower class. This is the $1 million class, but don't call it unlimited if it's actually not unlimited.
And I know that you're listening to this. We're not trying to crap on anybody.
And you remember,
just two dudes.
The most exciting thing in the world is 1,000+ horsepower LS based push rod cam in block motor with the mean chop rolling up on some mega car with 44-inch tires, and just, oh, you feel it in your soul and you smell the race fuel. That brings me joy. UTVs don't bring me joy. A little freaking two-cylinder Polaris motor does not do anything for me whatsoever. So understand that's the direction I'm coming from. Yeah. I love these big cars, but at the same time, if it's unlimited, it limits unlimited.
Well, and I want to.
I completely agree with you. Don't get me wrong, man. I love the rawness of a V8 thumping the ground, especially when it flies by. Look, there's no words to describe it. We're all cut from the same cloth when it comes to that stuff.
Yeah.
But 10 years ago, we didn't have 900cc motors pushing 2,000-pound race cars 100 miles an hour. The technology didn't exist yet, and now that it exists, and don't get me wrong, when I look at Ultra 4, I think about the evolution of the off-road race vehicle. This is the next step, or a wing in that evolution. It's not necessarily the next step. I shouldn't call it that. This is new, and just because guys have been running V8s for 20 years with what, you know, some would consider high horsepower, 800, 900 horsepower. I think it's really cool. Like I said, don't get me wrong. But these cars can produce 300-400 horsepower fairly easily compared to a big LS. They weigh a third of the weight. They're race winners. They are the evolution of what the guys that built Ultra 4, designed. This is the next evolutionary step. So in this, so I think it's completely reasonable to put them in the 4,400 unlimited class. They are a traditional 4,400 truck, shrunk down, the extra weight cut out, and the epitome of engine technology. You know, tiny little motor, compact, making 400 horsepower. I think it's great. I think they should. I think they should tout it as an accomplishment.
Yeah, it's wonderful. I like you think about it, but like I said, at the end of the day, a CVT belt and it doesn't bring me the same joy. But that doesn't mean that I don't think it's, like you said, it is the next evolution. You look at the automakers are going too. Like the V8's dead. You know, the future is small display, small high boost motors, and the V8 is going the way of the horse and the buggy. I will never let that happen in my heart and in my Suburbans, but as the world turns, the V8 is dead.
I want to put this disclaimer out there, though, because we are friends with these guys making these rules.
Like, yeah.
I call them friends.
Yeah.
They are in a terrible spot, right?
For sure.
They're in a loser, and we all admit that. We all get on Facebook and we all bellyache about it. But at the same time, 9 months ago, there was a pretty big cry for safety.
Yeah.
On us, what we asked for, you know, Montana, people didn't necessarily love the process of having to get pre-race teched because that was new. But you know what? That needed to be done. Every time we were standing in that group listening to people complain, it irritated the heck out of me. That was a step that needed to be taken, and we asked specifically for that. And then a bunch of race car drivers complaining about it.
Well, you have to understand with me, I don't like rules, period. I don't care what the rule's about. If you're going to be like, Hopper, you have to eat extra cheeseburgers tonight.
Well, so let's go back to that reverse.
I'm a rebel against it. I'm like, no, I don't want a cheeseburger.
Reverse psychology. Next time we're in the race car, I'm not going to let you wear a helmet. I'm going to be like, you're not allowed to wear a helmet or a seatbelt.
I will wear it just because.
And what happened the last time you rode my Razor without a seatbelt?
Oh, my
God.
Let's not go there.
For JT and Liam and even Alan, you know, we love those guys. They do a great job of coordinating this. This has nothing to do with us being mad at them at all.
No,
this is very political. I know it is, just from watching from the outside for the most part, sometimes the inside. I know USAC's involved, you know, just there's a lot that goes into it. I'm not knocking them one bit. I'm here to enjoy the sport just like everybody else is. On another hand, you know, we're trying to, from our little cubby hole, you know, being one race team out of 100, we're trying to build this along with others into a more professional sport. And I think that's what we strive for, is professionalism. You know, we want to have 9 cars racing next year, you know, 3 in each class, and we want to go 1, 2, 3. And that we're going to continue becoming, as long as they allow us, a bigger part of this organization. So nothing against those guys at all. Love them to death. JT is an awesome guy. Liam is an awesome guy. They don't even get butt hurt when you complain to them directly. So not with me, at least. Thank God. But
people who know me know that I like to complain about things just for no good reason. So I like to complain. So
we're also terrified of JT. Let's be honest.
Oh, you're first terrified. Arm. Oh, he's former Army too now. I mess with him all the time about that.
Yeah.
Yep. Good dude, though. Just great dude. Very scared.
I'm not. JT doesn't scare me like Liam does.
Oh, okay. Next time we see JT,
no, don't tell him.
I'm gonna remind him. I'm not scared of him. We'll see how that goes down.
Liam,
hey, Liam,
he gives
Liam
you that,
can ruin your race.
Liam, he gives you like that quiet, like dad. I'm the dad and disappointed in you, son. Type of look from across from him. You just feel bad and so. Because you know you're guilty, and he called you out without even calling you out. Liam scares me.
You know what scares me about Liam is I was talking to him last night. I don't remember what we were talking about, just, you know, shooting the crap. And he said, and I made a comment about the new rules. I said, I'll see you at Visions on 30 seconds. And he said, oh, you got jokes, do you? And he said, he said, see you at Tech. Oh, no.
That's terrifying to me.
That's terrifying. We're going to drive 17, 18 hours, man. Tell me now if I'm not going to pass.
No, but yeah, like we've said before, and we'll keep saying again, you know, I don't like rules. I like to complain, but at the end of the day, I like my people.
I think that too, like, we're really like spirit of the sport guys. I've had this conversation with numerous people, not necessarily on the show, but spirit of the sport, right? Because I don't have a famous last name. I'm not a Unser. Like, I just love the sport because I love it. I love racing. I love all kinds of things about it. And the beautiful thing about Ultra 4 in general is that it is new. I mean, they're only 15 years old, 16 years
old.
That's
why I love it. That's why I love this sport. And in my mind, as far as racing goes at this level, it's the only sanctioned body that is truly, and this is arguable now, but truly, you know, it's open. If you have an idea, you can implement it as long as it falls within these wide left and right boundaries. NASCAR tried to do that.
Well,
even car slightly.
Even look at a score or best in the desert. I mean, yep. Those guys have a class for you no matter what. You know, you can race with them. Downside is like what we saw at the Mint this year. Half the field in the Mint 400 left with the trophy because they had like 85 classes.
Yeah.
You know, I know UTVs, we've just gone to this 3-class thing the last thing, and some guys don't like it. Well, 3 classes is a heck of a lot better than 30. You know, Ultra 4 still is really a 7-class series. And guarantee you, I don't know of any major U.S. off-road race series that only has 7 classes. So it is still pretty open, but still pretty tight, you know?
Yeah. No, for sure, man. I really don't have that many complaints. Now, King of the Hammers, you want to open up some complaints about King of the Hammers? I can do that. But look, I love King of the Hammers too. That's why I show up. But I really don't have that many complaints, man. I really don't.
Yeah, it's.
I love it. We wouldn't be doing it if we didn't.
Yeah, right. And we've asked some other guys this, like outside of Ultra 4. I mean, obviously that's what we're focused on. But outside Ultra 4, you guys have aspirations to run any of those other races, like those big key name events? Like,
for sure, man. If somebody will show up with a briefcase full of money, I'll be at every Baja race and the Mint 400. Honestly, dude, I'm pretty good in the desert. We don't have that much desert over here, but every time I've gone out there, I've done well in the desert. So I think we'd do pretty good if we went and run the Mint 400. I'd like to go down to Mexico and do some racing. I'd really like to go over and race Dakar. In the Middle East.
Funny, Hunter Miller just told us that.
You know, I've been over that way. I've rode in that sand. I'd love to go back. So
we've seen guys do that. I think Greaves did it this last year, the last couple years. I think I heard whispers that Cheney's name might be involved in that. I mean, that's like next level for sure. I'd like to see a group of the Ultra 4 4900 guys or any class, like really just kind of team up and figure out how to make this work. Cause some of these races are about having a body count, right? You got to have a good number of supporters. It's a good idea to have a couple cars in the race. Like this is kind of what you were just alluding to with having nine cars, have an Ultra 4 next year. Get some of these top tier Ultra 4 guys and go into that score world and just like smoke everybody. Because I think we would. I mean,
yeah,
not to take away from the Robbie Gordons and the McCachrans and all those guys, but I think our racers are better, you know? We're the best.
You know how many times I've been asked why we came in from no experience, jumped straight into pro mod racing Hammers? And I basically said, you know, why not immediately jump to the hardest class at the hardest race that we can physically get to and see where we stand? So I'll continue running pro mod, even if we're not pulling first place every month. I'll continue running it because I know I'm running with the best guys in the country. So, and I think you'll see, you know, Corey Willis, Kyle Cheney, you know, Paul Wolf, let's see, Terry raced in Montana. I mean, these are fast guys. You know, some of these guys people know and they don't even follow Ultra 4. You know, they've been racing a long time. So I would rather compete with them. So I think we would do well if a bunch of us jumped over, you know, after compete with these guys for a while and learning how to even try to keep up with them. I think if we jumped over and competed, we'd probably do pretty well.
Well, and again, that goes back to what I was saying earlier. We can all mess with each other, mm-hmm. but nobody else from the outside should be messing with us. And I think it would just be really cool. I know Dave Cole was a part of this like a year and a half, like 1,000, when they got a handful of those guys with the RS1s. You know, ZRP was involved. Who else? Kurtz Polaris was involved. They went down there with a handful of RS1s and they kind of teamed up and it worked for some of them really well. I think we need to do something. We need to put something together and get some big, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, for sure, man. That's kind of what we're doing right now. I mean, to be honest with you, the team we're building.
So yeah, let's talk about this.
Go ahead.
East Coast Cowboys, that's what you guys are calling this organization, this team that you're working with, right? You started that. You're a big part of starting that. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, I started a couple of years ago. We were just making like stupid YouTube videos, mud riding, and just enjoying being rule breakers, just enjoying it, you know. Never had an aspiration of building a race team. That went on for a couple of years, just making videos with some guys around here. And then kind of went dormant for a while. And then, you know, once we started racing hammers, still didn't have a team name or anything. I was just Zach Pollard. And then we were like, well, let's put a team together. We'll be Team ECC, you know, ECC Racing. ECC obviously being East Coast Cowboys. We're all from the East Coast. And we're a little wild, so it fit. Obviously, there aren't any other names like it running around. So it's easy to pick out.
I mean, I do have to ask, because we don't know any – we meet the East Coast. We don't even know what determines West Coast. But are there Cowboys in the East Coast?
Are there even cows in the East Coast?
All right. I am not a cowboy. I don't do the whole lasso thing and ride around on a bareback horse. I don't do that. Using the word cowboy was more about the spirit of the word. We don't have a cattle farm. We don't have a ranch. We're not in Texas.
Are you walking around wearing Wranglers?
I do walk bow-legged. No, but no, I don't. I don't even wear Wranglers, man. Well, no, I got Carhartt pants on right now.
There you go.
But it was about the spirit of the word.
I like that.
You know, those guys that kind of live out on the edge, live a little risky, have fun. You know, that was mostly the spirit of the word.
Now, see, you had me all jacked up to make fun about being some kind of city slicker cowboy. And then that was a perfect answer to that question, man.
I think I'm the furthest thing away from a city slicker, but I wouldn't call myself a cowboy.
Well, I don't said that, but I think we could count on one hand between me and Hopper how many times we've been to the East Coast.
Yeah, like on one finger.
I don't even, like I said, I don't even know what determines. I think I'm from the Midwest in Kansas. And then I hear people tell me they're from the Midwest and they're from like Ohio or something.
I don't even know where Kansas is.
No,
drove through there like 5 times.
Yeah, it's okay. Just don't think about it too much. I went east one time and went into Virginia and I'm up to DC. Holy moly, the trees that it's spooky. I don't like it. You can't see because there's trees everywhere. Everywhere you look, there's a dang tree.
Which means there's probably snakes and spiders.
Which I like, not spiders. So yeah, and then you watch your video, you know, the Ultra 4 races out east in the trees. I'm like, I don't know how you guys do this. Like, and it's like,
I don't do it. I hit trees.
Well, and then like you alluded to earlier, like our lodgepole pines up here, like, hey, you hit it, no big deal. Like, you got hardwoods. Like, you hit them and they don't move.
No.
Oh my gosh. No.
So I think it was Aaron Lynch who told me at Montana, we had pre-ran. I think we'd even qualified. So I'm like, Aaron, think, man, is it Montana as cool as we hyped it up to be? And he said, I don't know, man. I'm not comfortable. I don't know if I like it. And I was like, really? Like, what do you not like? And he goes, there's no trees anywhere. He's like, I feel like I can't my speed. You know, he just was not comfortable without the trees. I was just like, oh man, this is like what I grew up in, like pasture racing.
Yeah,
but
Montana was something else, man. Yeah, I had a blast up there. I've wanted to go up there for a long time just to go, and to race it was even a cooler experience. So absolute blast up there. A lot of high speed stuff, man. We got our car, you know, as fast as we can get it, not at hammers. I mean, it was haul and tail. You know, on the qualifying loop, we hit 104. I mean, that's awesome. You know, you can hit those speeds pretty easy out in desert when you get the straightaways. But, you know, to do that out there in the plains was just a great opportunity. Beautiful views, really fun race, real flowy and fast. Loved everything about it. Loved how it was ran and everything, so.
Yeah, we were real excited to help you in the pits, and all of a sudden you walked up behind us and like tapped us on like in the middle of the race. Like,
whoa!
Yeah, dude. Somebody, I was on, so my first lap. I won't even start pointing fingers here, but we qualified decent, came in, parked the car, you know, race prepped it, and in this scenario, race prep because qual was the same day. We didn't have to re-nut and bolt. We just checked all of our points. And one of those points is looking at the turbo, make sure everything looks good. That little clip that holds the wastegate actuator rod on.
Little E-clip.
Yep, it was good to go. I bend them a little bit so I can so they do not come off. I mean, there's no way it comes off on its own. Pulled up to the starting line, full throttle out the gate. Soon as I let off, I lost all boost. Wastegate just flung open. That clip mysteriously disappeared. So I ran the whole first lap with no boost. I still ran a 58 minute lap, which is pretty decent.
Yeah.
Pulled back through the pits. You know, Kyle and you guys. I'm like yelling at Kyle. I'm like, figure out what it is. Look, check the turbo. And he threw, I guess, some wire you guys had laying around. I don't know. Threw some wire on that wastegate actuator and then got back out there. And holy crap, the car was fast. I was like, dude, this thing is freaking flying. Well, he wired it so tight the wastegate wasn't opening. So it's just getting every bit of boost that turbo could build.
You went from
There's no telling how much boost that car was getting. I mean, it was ridiculous. So ran that, I was about halfway through the second lap, and then somebody just hit me right in the back right corner, flipped me over, and I couldn't see who it was because when I rolled, I kind of kicked left. I sat there for a little while. Aaron pulled through and helped me recover. Got back on the track, started hauling tail, popped back up four people, passed them, was chasing down a Pro R in a straight. Had the car wound up probably 9,500 miles an hour and heard a loud pop, blew the plenum in two. So, the wastegate being wired shut didn't help it. It's also run a bad luck. It just is what it is. We addressed the problem and we'll have it fixed for visions. That kind of took me out of the race. So I used a winch line, ran it around the back of the car, wrapped it around the plenum and winched it all back together. And then that helped it off course.
That is a cowboy fix right there.
Well, and one of the things I love about what I do about is every race I learn something new, and that was a first for us in our pits is dealing with a failure like that. Obviously, didn't have anything really besides that safety wire that you ended up using. So I went out and I bought a whole assortment of different styles and shapes and sizes of those E-clips and circlips and different things like that.
I know who you're pitting for now.
So when we have it, when someone else pulls in the pit next time and they have next time, I got it.
You want to hear a crazy story from Montana? So after we broke, I pulled off. Well, there's two parts of this. I pulled off and there was a guy in a Razor, four-seat Razor. No idea who they were, but I was out of the race. So I was like, I helped these guys. They had blown a belt. Well, they were like, a belt's on the way. We don't have a belt tool. Or whatever you guys use. I don't know, like shove a 10-millimeter dick bolt in there or what. I don't know what you do. But somebody threw a belt out of another Razor coming by, and they couldn't get the belt on. So I said, start it. And I said, put it to the floor. And I slipped his belt over his primary and kicked it on the secondary. And it slipped into his clutches. He was like, how'd you do that? I'm like, dude, I had to do that once in my race, in my X3. That was a cool trick. Getting a belt on. I don't know if you guys know how to do that. I don't know if anybody knows how to do that. I've never heard of it.
I just learned about it right now. So now I
keep it on with my boot because I race in cowboy boots. I don't race in like Sparco. I race like in cowboy boots. That's my thing. So I can kick my foot up in there and not lose it. So they took off. And then this like ranch hand, I guess works on the ranch, walks up to me. He's like, are you broken? I was like, yeah. He's like, can you get back? I was like, yeah. And I said, can you point me in the right direction so I can bypass the race course? And he's like, go down there through the graveyard, hang a left at the water tower. Go, you're going to go. And I was like, I'm literally talking to like a Yellowstone TV show ranch hand right in the middle of nowhere. It was a good time, man. Just a great experience. Just a great experience. It was a good time.
So we, like I said, we don't drive race cars. Hopper and I don't. We do try to observe and learn from those lessons. After a race, we'll get together and be like, what did we not have that we needed?
Yeah, it's our craft, you got drivers, you got co-drivers, co-driving is a whole craft, and then you got it's like that is Zach and
man, we just like helping people. It was fun to get connected with you guys at Montana. We pitted for so many freaking cars. It was crazy. So fun. It's amazing how many people come to the race with the guy. I mean, I think you guys came with one guy or two guys.
Like, dude, Kyle Sterke and I. He's basically my partner in crime on everything. We run a company together. We race together. So, you know, we always go together. And then Aaron and JT, we brought JT. So, yeah, we roll light, man. Even to hammers. Hammers our first year, it was me, my partner Kyle, and then our families flew out, you know, later on. But it was two guys out there trying to conquer the world. You know what I'm talking about.
Can appreciate that. I like the 60 people that we hang out with and camp with at Hammers, but sometimes six sounds like the magic number. I don't know. Hopper always tries to convince me that 60 is better.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this year, man, we had an outpouring of help. I mean, Sign Perry, a veteran organization, does a lot of motorsport stuff. They showed up and really helped us out. X3 Nation, Robbie Lunsford, he showed up and, you know, pitted with us and everything. Obviously, I had Kyle there. We had a great deal of help this year as compared to last year. But, yeah, for the most part, we roll light.
Well, we'd love to see you bring one of those East Coast guys to Hammers. I know that is like a big ask because it's literally across the nation for some of these guys. But, yeah. Like, an Aaron Lynch, Cody Quattlebaum was there this year, co-driving in the 44, and he caught Rich in the 49. Man, I'd love to see kind of race that. Like, it's a tough race, but it's kind of watching the East Coast guys come in because you don't know what you don't know, and sometimes that's okay. Like, you might do better than that.
Yeah, you don't know until you try it, and that was, like I said, our first year, that was basically – the mentality we had to have. We had to show up and just try it because we didn't know what, you know, we don't know. But yeah, I'd love to see more East Coast guys out there. It is a really big lift. I mean, you know, some places on the East Coast are driving 36 hours. And at a minimum, you need a race car, but you're probably going to want a pit vehicle, a second car to pre-run with. And now you're talking about a 40-plus foot trailer that weighs 18,000 pounds. So you got to be equipped to pull it. You know, it's a lot, man. That trip probably ends up costing $50,000 a team at least.
Yeah.
I mean, fuel, lodging, food, breakdowns, tires. It's a lot of money. So it takes a lot, but I think we'll see more East Coast guys out there. I know we'll be there, and hopefully we'll bring in some more East Coast guys with us in cars. So
Give us like a sponsor rundown, man. Like, how are you making this happen? That's like a two-part question. How do you go about getting sponsors? Because we have people ask us that all the time. And who are some of the folks that you, like you said, networked with? And give us a little bit of that rundown on your program.
So as far as sponsorship goes, I'll kind of hit my big sponsors real quick because they're essential to our operation. Bull Light Wheels, great sponsor. I hear people say all the time, oh, it's so hard to get a wheel sponsor that actually does anything other than a discount. Man, Bull Light Wheels, not for their product, great product, love it, helps us, you know, when they do really well at these races. I won't say win every race because we don't win every race. But they're just a great sponsor, and they do a lot of heavy lifting for us when we need it. We work a lot with KWI. And G-Force Racing Technologies, they do our suspension work, get us really dialed up there at those 100-mile-an-hour plus speeds, you know, 120-mile-an-hour out in the desert. Wayland Speed doing our performance stuff. ZRP providing us with a lot of billet parts and belts and other stuff to keep our car strong because we're taking a lot of hard blows. And then SD Lighting to keep us, you know, seeing at night, especially when we're pre-running prior to races if we show up late. So those are kind of our big sponsors. That have really stuck with me this season, some last season, but really came on board hard this season. As far as getting sponsors go, are you looking like advice I would give somebody getting sponsors?
Yeah, heck yeah.
Dude, the best thing I can tell anyone to do, cold call, man. I think applying through a website's cool. Hey, fill out this form, that's cool. But dude, call them. And If you're truly trying to get a partner and not a sponsor, right? We call them sponsors. I usually call them partners because we try to do more with our quote sponsors the most. We want to be a team with them. We want to give them feedback, make their product better so that they can make us faster. So we're more partners than anything. Best thing you can do is look for small businesses, like CT Raceworks used to be, and they still do have that small business mentality and customer service. But they're getting larger because they're just so popular. But you know, jumping on with CT a couple of years ago would have been great, and it still is. I'm not saying it's not, but look for small companies. Like, you know, one company we're starting to work with right now, Valor Off Road. Just came out with a tire called the Alpha.
They have come out hot and heavy, man. Dude, they're out there pounding doors too.
We will be running that tire at Visions. As far as I know, I think we're the only one that's going to be running it. Maybe some others that I've heard. But that is an American-based company, American design, American manufactured. If you call him back with feedback, he can make changes. That's a great company to work with. I bring him up because they're a small business. And that would be a great opportunity for, you know, somebody to reach out, for example, you know, and that applies to just about anything, your suspension components, your belt, your clutches, your engine work, you know, all that stuff. But as far as getting sponsors, call, be yourself, be honest and upfront. Don't embellish too much. Don't overpromise. I think the best policy is to underpromise, overperform. And just, you know, just be honest with them. Hey, look, here's what I'm trying to do. I want to race these races. Here's what I have raced. Here's my current track record. If the track record ain't the best, here's my idea on how we can get better. And I think we need you on board with our team to make us better. You know, so I think that's how you get sponsors. And that's kind of, you know, how I go about it. Just honesty and goodwill. You know, I know it sounds good and all cliche, but that's truly what it takes to get good partners.
No, I'm totally with you, man. That's great advice. I'm a cold call fan. You know, I know Joe Gould, one of the guys that we help a lot. He's the same way. Guy gets 100 emails a day, but if you can get somebody on the phone and tell them who you are and tell them your story, yeah, hey, you're a real person. I think a lot of people, especially in like the UTV world, think Polaris, Can-Am, like BF Goodrich, like big names. And I love the part that said, hey, look into some of these smaller companies because these guys can be a little more aggressive. Yes. They're in the same boat you're in, you know, mm-hmm. just a little bit of a different direction, and they want to grow. I like that. And I also tell people all the time, don't say no to people. I mean, now that could be taken a couple of different ways, but you know, when a guy calls you up and says, hey, we want to talk, man, even if it's a company you've heard of, like, talk to them, you know, don't ever not answer an email or a phone call because it'll get around, you know, and they might have a good story too, just because you aren't a fan of that product or that you don't know that company. That doesn't mean they that meant to come on board either.
Another philosophy I have on this, as far as reaching out to these smaller businesses, like you said, they're just as aggressive. They want to grow. They need to break into the industry as well. So you're selling yourself to them, you know, that I'm going to be a good steward and push your product accordingly. And I'm going to, you know, test it and all that, and all these things they get as benefits for sponsoring you. But another aspect of this is, you know, racers watch each other very closely. You know, somebody posts an Instagram story looking around their shop and you see a certain kind of tire, you know, and you're like, he's running that tire, looks to be about a 32, 33, whatever, Yokohama, you know what I mean? That racer, if they're amateur or just haven't been around long, is probably going to go seek out that same tire, you know, watching somebody faster than them, what they're doing. But the advice I always give is counter to that. If you see a guy that's very, let's use Kyle Chaney, for example. Love Kyle, great guy. Let's use Kyle Chaney for an example. You see what Kyle Chaney's doing as a racer and you try to copy him, you know, front to back, you're not going to beat him. Even if you built an exact replica of his car, exactly, and you held that thing to the floor, Kyle is going to outskill you 7 out of 7 days of the week. So you got to, man, you got to think outside the box. Start using products that he's not using. You're going to have to go use a product that nobody else is using yet. Run a different tire. Run different power levels. Run different axles. You know, run a lighter cage. Run a cage, you know, built differently. Aerodynamics. Dude, you got to think outside the box to beat, for example, him in this scenario. You know, you can't just copy him and expect to beat him. You're not going to outskill him. So that's what I tell people. And that's the great part about, you know, working with companies that aren't necessarily well known yet. You know, Handy Industries started working with the Miller brothers. I think it was last year. I was in talks with Handy Industries before that for some lifts and such. They weren't really well known yet in UTV racing. Now look at them. You know, that was a great opportunity for the Miller brothers and for Handy from my perspective, you know, on the outside. You know, Handy really kind of blew up around the pits, you know, people buying their lifts and stuff. So that's what those are the opportunities people need to look for as racers trying to get sponsorship, you know.
All that being said, like, we still really want Harbor Freight to sponsor us.
Dude, I talked to Harbor Freight 3 days ago. I talked to Harbor Freight 3 days ago. I'm not even joking.
We have been, like, pestering the heck out of them. Like, this guy right here to my right is Mr. Harbor Freight America. If they had a Miss USA type pageant, Hopper would win the Mr. Harbor Freight USA award.
Oh.
And the content that you're putting on YouTube just screams Harbor Freight.
I use too much gear wrench. What can I say?
Oh, man. Dude, I love Harbor Freight, man. You know how many times Harbor Freight saved my tail?
Oh, dude, yeah.
You know the welder? You know the welder Harbor Freight? You hold the face mask like off a handle?
Yes.
Bro, uh-huh. I can't even tell you how many times as a teenager I would go buy that welder, weld something, and then be like, oh man, it broke.
Yep.
Because they're just like they're not the best welder in the world. Yeah. You know?
And but now they have now they have a gold ratchet wrench. I mean, what more can you ask for?
That's true.
I will say this, I don't use their zip ties. I'm a little picky.
And good zip ties, even the good ones, sometimes you get them and they like you break six of them before you find what doesn't snap on you because they're all brittle.
I've never been picky about my zip ties, man. If it's a zip tie,
when you pull out a Harbor Freight bag of zip ties and you break the first 20 of them.
Well, here's the deal, we live at altitude, so it's dry up here, so plastic just dries right out, so it's all crispy, and then the zip tie. Because it's lost all the plastic juices.
And some of us are holding our race cars together with zip ties.
Me included.
Yeah. My personal car, not so much. That thing is, you know.
It's got a sombrero on the hood.
Yes, it does. It is wearing its sombrero right now.
It's celebratory.
Oh. Well, yeah, man. I didn't know where this was going to go tonight. We say this every time we have a guest on.
Every time.
Like, man. I learned so much tonight. I feel much better about myself having been a part of this conversation. I hope our listeners do.
I hope JT isn't too mean
us. JT, if it was all Hopper's fault, that was some great advice there, man. Like, I like that. We do need to ask a couple more random questions.
Sure.
We need to know how you make your bacon, because everybody always loves
how you make it, like how you eat it.
Well, I want to know how you make it too, but.
Well, I usually do it on a skillet. Sometimes I microwave it if I don't want it crunchy.
So, but are you crispy or are you a chewy bacon guy?
I prefer sausage.
Okay.
Oh, wild card.
Haven't gotten that answer in a while. I can respect that. I went through days where I didn't like bacon.
What?
It was a long time ago. You didn't know me, man. I was experimenting. Lots of Pepsi and sausage.
I could go so many places with that Pepsi and sausage. But you know what? I won't. I'll be the bigger man here.
I was more into the sausage patty than the sausage links.
Thank you.
I don't know if that makes a difference.
So you're a sausage guy.
I wouldn't say I'm a sausage guy.
So let's circle back around back to the bacon. Like, if sausage is not available, well, how do you eat your bacon? Crispy or chewy?
I like it right in the middle. It's like a s'mores marshmallow. Like, some people like that thing burnt, and some like it like all. You know, I like it golden. You know, right in the middle, a little bit of soft, a little bit of crunch. You know.
Mm.
I will say this.
He's a well-rounded man.
Casey Gilbert does not believe that I have eaten a raw piece of bacon before.
Dude, I will get a raw piece of bacon out of my fridge right now and eat it. I don't care. Yeah, I love it.
It's not raw.
I'd like to warm it up. You know, 30, 45 seconds maybe.
It's been chemically
If you don't salivate over raw red meat, you're not a man, all right? I don't care. If you don't walk down the grocery store aisle and see the meat section and immediately get, you know, a watery mouth.
Yeah.
You're not a carnivore, bro. You're not a man.
But a guy can still eat chicken tendies once in a while, no, right? Nothing chicken tendies, right?
I had wings the other day in Denver, and they, just so you know, they don't have – they're like Zach wings, and I felt ashamed.
What do you mean?
I felt ashamed.
Yeah.
They're not real wings. They're boneless, like
– they're tendies.
Zach wings. Sorry, I felt ashamed. I felt dirty. Although, it was – the garlic parmesan's chicken sandwich was delicious.
How did we get on food?
Is this
where you guys edit? You guys edit this stuff out?
No. This is the best part.
This is how you get good organic content, right? Alan Johnson, I think, uses that word all the time. Organic.
Organic.
Yeah.
I don't eat organic food. I mean, I guess I could. I'm just not like
this. This is some of that non-GMO podcast right here.
I tell you what.
I love you both.
I eat all of them. I eat non-GMOs. I eat the GMOs.
Dude, you eat like freaking buttered nut squash, that's it. That's all you eat.
So I have to be careful sometimes because I have nut squash. Awesome. thanks for coming on the show. It's great chatting with you and figuring out who you are and what these cowboys are all about. I'll tell you what.
Yeah, I wish we were going to Vision. We'd love to hang out with you, but it sounds like we're going to probably see you at a West Coast race. So, yeah.
Yeah, we race Visions, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. Back to Oklahoma, and then we'll be out at Lake Havasu.
Oh, can't wait.
Man, did you race Disney last year?
I did not. I've never been.
Oh, man, you're going to like it.
Disney's primo.
We'll put this out there. Part of the reason we're not going to Visions, we only want to go to Oklahoma as little as possible. And I say that because my family made numerous trips to Oklahoma all the time as a child. We had to pick an Oklahoma race, and if it was Visions or if it was Disney, we are really looking forward to Disney. It's legit Ultra 4 racing, I think.
Yeah, it's nothing out there. It's super cool.
It's going to be a good time, man, for sure.
Yeah.
So, like Hopper said, thanks for coming on tonight. Man, good show this week.
Yeah, it was.
We didn't even, I feel like in the segment tonight, we did not complain as much as usual.
I feel like I complained plenty.
We must be having a good week. I don't know.
Yeah.
I like the mood a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm just joking.
Well, thanks again, everybody, for checking us out this week. Again, big shout out to our buddy, Cody Strode. He won the Northeast giveaway that we've been doing the last month. Cody, I'm going to get a hold of you. We're going to get you some lights. Man, and like we said, and if you got a company that wants to do a giveaway on the show, man, we are all about it. Even if you are a chicken wing company,
we
can work with you on that, man.
With you if it's edible.
So, good luck to everybody at Visions next week. We hope you're listening while you're on the way there. We hope you have a safe race. And we'll catch everybody next week, 2 weeks, we'll see what it brings. You know, that's that organic part. But yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. And we really appreciate it.
You've been listening to The Pit Guys. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and all major podcast platforms. We'll see you at the races.